The United States was founded primarily for religious freedom. That was certainly one of the major impetuses for getting this nation launched in the first place. Recent Supreme Court decisions have actually provided some important victories for religious freedom, so much so that some on the left are now trying to impugn some of the conservative justices to force them off the court, or proposing other ideas like packing the court in order to derail the conservative Supreme Court. Jeremy Dice is special counsel for litigation and communications at First Liberty Institute. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And this is Vocal Point, and we're going to welcome back to the program Jeremy Dice. Jeremy, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. How about, as a very start, what would you say about the founders and the commitment to religious liberty? And then we'll talk about modern times.
Yeah, look, I think the founders understood, having surveyed human history and then also lived through a pretty important part of our experience as humans, that one's expression of religion is extremely important, not just to what it means horizontally, you mean man to man, human to human, but what it means in terms of the eternal scheme of things. And throughout human history, tyrants and despots have always challenged those things that would challenge their claim to power. And religion had been chiefly among the things that would be so challenged. And so what you have is the founders saying, you know what, these things belong to us by virtue of our creation. I mean, we see that in our Declaration of Independence, where it talks about these rights that were that were given to us by our creator. They were endowed to us by our creator. They were not something that government created. It was something that is a part and parcel of who we are as human beings in the human experience. And so the founders, acting upon that as sort of the national philosophy expressed in our Declaration of Independence, expand upon that, or maybe I should say that they protect that the most effectively in our Constitution. You have the Constitution and the main parts, the articles there that expressly articulate what kind of powers our government's going to have. What we're giving up as individuals to form a more collective union, so to speak. But then the amendments begin, and the very first of those amendments, the very first thing they put in the amendments, is the things that they're saying, we did not give these up. This still belongs to us as humans. They have not been given over to the government to regulate. The very first thing that they put in there is the free exercise of religion. And so I think it screams from history that the founding fathers were very concerned that presidents, senators, congressmen, mayors, councilmen down the line in the rest of our national experience, if they were to reflect the human experience from, you know, when creation started, they would try to remove the opportunity for the American people to experience the full panoply of rights that God had given to them by virtue of their creation. And so enshrined in that First Amendment is much more than a couple words. It is a very ethos, a smart way of looking at what it means to be human. And it means that you ought to be able to have the space to commune with the divine as your conscience demands that you do so. That is what they put in place in the First Amendment. And all we think of is those two phrases, the establishment of religion, the free exercise thereof. But there's a whole lot going on in those two clauses of the First Amendment.
Okay, and here's what it says. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And historically was understood that the Establishment Clause was basically saying that there'll be no established church at the national level. In other words, like the church of, there's going to be no Church of America like there was a Church of England, where everybody had to conform to the same. But beginning in 1947, the Supreme Court decision changed that to mean essentially that, well, there's going to be this separation of church and state, a very strict separation of church and state. Then by the time of the early 1970s, you had something called the Lemon v. Kurtzman decision, which essentially said that secularism is more important effectively than religious values. Am I overstating things here?
No, I mean, I think you're hitting it right on, that there is this new notion that had been created really out of whole cloth. It really doesn't have any constitutional textual basis for their claims here, but that you know, if someone were offended that there was a little bit too much religion lapping into the public square, they could, just simply express their offense. They would get them into court, and whatever sympathies that the judges would have at that point for that person who was upset by the sight of religion in public, well, they would get some sort of dispensation from the court to say that, well, maybe that is an establishment of religion. But, I mean, there's no textual understanding, meaning the words don't make sense if you believe that seeing religion expressed in public, let's say, a prayer before a public meeting, that is somehow an establishment of religion. I mean, there's no language that can explain that other than to say that is a judge creating that out of whole cloth, because as far as I know, let's take a monument, for example, a cross-shaped veterans monument, for example, in the middle of a highway. That monument is static. It never grabs a passerby, grabs them by the neck, and forces them to the knee to pray to the God that is represented by that cross. It just doesn't happen. And so there is no, quote, establishment in that actual literal sense. There can only be this sort of, well, there's an entanglement argument here. Well, look, the court has thankfully in recent years done away with that language. It has overruled the Lemon case that you referred to. That is no longer good law. And what the court is doing in recent years is unwinding and untying the fetters that have bound the free exercise of religion because of that Lemon test. And thank goodness we now live in a day and age that is more free than it has been, well, at least in my entire lifetime.
And you know what? God bless you and your organization, because you are part of that, as well as the Alliance Defending Freedom and others as well, Liberty Council. We thank God for that. Thank God for what's been happening. Okay, so let's review some recent victories. The football coach prayers, that was one of the first Liberty cases. Tell us about the football coach guy.
Yeah, that's Coach Joe Kennedy, of course, and he was fired for taking a knee in private prayer for 15 or 30 seconds after the football game was over with. Coach Kennedy made that commitment that he's going to be coaching. He was going to offer that prayer after the end of every game, and because he did so, he lost his job, and then he fought for 8 years to get that back. And in just a few short weeks on September 1st, that's going to be the chance for him to go back for the first time in 8 years. And what the Supreme Court said was that, look, there's two clauses in that First Amendment. We've already talked about them. And the court was very explicit. They said, we're giving way too much emphasis to one of those clauses to the detriment of the other clause. And that doesn't make any sense at all. Those two clauses are meant to work together. They're meant to work in complementary fashion.
So in other words, they should be emphasizing the free exercise as well as the Establishment Clause. And by the way, it was the distortion of the Establishment Clause that was the problem in the first place.
That is exactly right. And what the court is saying is that, look, guys, at least at a minimum, those have become out of balance. And so we need to restore that balance. There's an argument to be made that there is actually a greater emphasis, or should be, on the free exercise clause, frankly, than the establishment clause. But I'll take the kind of neutral approach to say that there is at least a balance between those two things. And that balance had been created way out of whack. And so what the court was to say is that, look, there's no argument you can make that Coach Kennedy praying for 15 to 30 seconds by himself, silently, at the 50-yard line of a football field was in any way somehow the state of Washington and by extension the United States of America forcing anyone to establish a religion on that field. That would be laughable to even conclude. And yet that's what the argument actually was. But the court kicked that to the curb and said that is not the case. You cannot tell somebody that they cannot exercise their religion in this country. And the way that the courts had been interpreting it for 50 years, 45 years, had led to this very result, that Coach Kennedy, if he was going to maintain his job, would have had to have checked that religion in the glove box of his car before he walked through the schoolhouse gates. And the court said, no, that's not the way that's going to be. Instead, the court says, we're going to recognize that people have a fundamental right to the free exercise of religion and are going to be allowed to carry that into the schoolhouse as well. So that's not where we live. That Lemon test, that's gone. And now we live in a country that for 45 years we've never known. But it's a much more free country in line with what the Founding Fathers wanted in the first place.
Tell us about the mailman who refused to work on Sunday.
Yeah, Gerald Groff is a letter carrier up in the state of Pennsylvania. And he got that job with the United States Postal Service intentionally. What he wanted was a job that would allow him to respect the Sabbath and keep it holy. That's very important to him, to follow that commandment. And so when he got that job, the United States Postal Service famously did not work on Sundays. They didn't deliver mail on Sundays. That's only changed in recent years when Amazon purchased a contract from the United States Postal Service to, you know, kind of help sagging sales from the USPS. And they required now the letter carriers to work on Sundays. And, you know, Gerald said, that's just not going to work. I've got this conscience objection to it all. Can we please work together to find a better solution? And at first they stumbled on a way to be able to do that, but that was removed from Gerald. And so he was being forced to come into work on Sundays. And he said, I'm not going to violate my conscience. And so there were a bit of an impasse. He actually even changed postal offices, because another post office wasn't doing that yet. He lost all of his seniority in the process. He went to the complete back of the line. And this is an important point because, you know, he could have compromised his faith, you know, 3-4 times maybe in a given year. And he would have had the seniority that he would have needed to schedule himself off of working on Sundays. But he refused to violate his conscience even one time to get that to be the case. And instead found himself drummed up on charges for, I think he had 8 different disciplinary interviews. He had several letters of warning put into his file. He was suspended a couple of times. But ultimately, the Supreme Court heard that case and overturned, again, a case that was old as he and I are, 45 years old, to say that, you know, you have to actually accommodate people. You've got to work together from the boardroom to the mailroom to come up with a way to honor people's conscientious objections to these various things. And so that case is now going to stand for the proposition that corporations that wish to exert their will on their employees, to force them to follow all manner of things that might violate their conscience, whether that's working on a Sunday or having to attend certain equity trainings or diversity trainings, things like that are going to work against their faith. Well, they're going to have to come up with a solution for those that say, look, that's going to violate my conscience if you force me into this. And this is the first meaningful protection we've had on that front since the law Title VII was put in place in the late 60s. Thankfully, we've got a court that's recognizing that the way that this has been operating has been to allow employers and big businesses off the hook from having to come together at the table to figure out a way that works for the business as a solution for the business as a whole to respect the rights of its employees to honor their faith. Great decision for freedom.
Okay, we have about a minute and a half left. Just real fast, one quick observation about that, and we'll move on to the next case. And that is, that was surprising in the sense that it was unanimous, 9-0.
Well, I think it underscores how important of a case that this was, that there was a case that was really confusing that every circuit had adopted. And it really, once that case was trotted out, it made the employee lose every single time. Because what it said before was that, you know, you only have to give a de minimis, just a little tiny bit, a scintilla of respect. And if it actually causes even just a little tiny bit of inconvenience to the company wins. Well, now what that has done has been, again, to shift that thinking, to say, look, you got to get the boardroom and the mailroom, everybody in between, they've got to get involved and work out a way that works for the company and also respects the free exercise of religion of its employees. I think that's what most Americans want anyway. And so we've just now gotten back to that standard that the founders wanted us to have anyway, to respect people of faith wherever they go throughout the public square.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left. How about a closing thought? FirstLiberty.org.
Look, FirstLiberty.org is where you're going to learn a lot about what we're doing every day and about our cases. Here's the thing. We can win all these cases, but if you and I as Americans don't take advantage of the historic wins that we're having at the Supreme Court, then it's only partially meaningful. So, for instance, Coach Kennedy, we had a great win there, overturned a massive.
We have
precedent.
10 seconds. 10 seconds.
Well,
left.
Now we're asking people to go and take a knee with Coach Kennedy, wherever they may be, to practice the very thing that the freedom we've secured at the Supreme Court. So go to FirstLiberty.org and take a knee with Coach Kennedy.
All right, Jeremy Dice, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.